irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, happy Monday, everybody, and thank you so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. Today, I'm excited to have with us Dr. Randall Bell. Dr. Bell is a socioeconomist and the CEO of Landmark Research Group, LLC. Prior to this, he led a national practice at PricewaterhouseCoopers, the world's largest consulting firm. The strategic and problem-solving skills of Dr. Bell are well established. He consulted on the World Trade Center, the Flight 93 crash sites, the BP oil spill, Hurricane Katrina, the nuclear testing on Bikini Atoll, and several tragedies, including JonBenet Ramsey, O.J. Simpson, and the Heaven's Gate mass suicide mansion. His research has taken him to all 50 states and the seven continents. He is known for his ability to analyze complex situations and present his findings in an interesting, organized, and intelligent way. Dr. Bell's career has been profiled in the Wall Street Journal, People Magazine, the New York Times, the Chicago Tribune, the Los Angeles Times, CNN, and every national news network. He is a popular speaker at events around the globe. Dr. Bell earned his PhD in Human and Organizational Systems from Fielding Graduate University and his MBA from UCLA. He is married and has four children. Dr. Bell grew up in Southern California and is an avid volunteer with youth groups, the homeless, and at-risk teens. Thanks so much for joining us today, Dr. Bell.
Jennifer, it's great to be with you.
Yeah, it's wonderful. My God, that is, you've been around the globe and then some, and this is such an interesting area to specialize in. How did you become interested in this?
I honestly kind of fell into it by accident. I was going to go to law school. I took the LSAT and got into law school, and then I just thought, you know what, I don't know if the world needs another lawyer. And I just thought, what if I take my skill set, which is measuring value, and turn it upside down, look at what measures loss and value. And, you know, I wonder what that would be like. It could be really interesting. And it turned out that I was more than right. It's just been fascinating. It was an accident.
That's so funny. Like many great things in life, sometimes we have one plan for ourselves, and all of a sudden a different path takes us a completely new direction.
Yeah, exactly. You got it.
So talk to me a little bit about your book before we get into how this applies to people who might be out there listening and thinking, well, gosh, okay, so we're talking about disaster relief and some of these obstacles we might face. Let's talk first a little bit about your book, Me, We, Do, Be, The Four Cornerstones of Success. Tell me a little bit about how that book came to be. After you did this research, what led you to going the direction of becoming an author and particularly studying this subject?
Well, that's kind of the million-dollar question. The book has nothing to do with disaster relief. In fact, I do discuss the disasters in the book here and there, but it really doesn't address them in any great depth. Basically, having been the person on planet Earth who's been to more disaster sites around the world than anybody, I don't say that in a boastful way. It's just a historical fact. You meet the people behind the statistics, and oftentimes you'll sit on a log or on a park bench or on a curb or on rubble, sitting and talking to these people. And I've noticed that in the aftermath, some people dive, some people survive, and some people thrive. And I've really paid attention to the thrivers, what they do. And I thought, you know, this is just too important of an opportunity, too important of an experience to just, you know, enjoy it personally and not share, at least with whoever wants to hear about it. So on those long trips around the country and around the world, I wrote this book, Me, We, Do, Be. And what I've really found, Jennifer, that the essence of Me, We, Do, Be is that we think that complex problems require complex solutions. That's simply not true. Oftentimes, the problem and the solution, the problem is caused by neglect of some simple fundamentals. And more importantly, the solution is in some simple fundamentals. And if we break it up into these me, we, do, be cornerstones, we can really get some very effective solutions to whatever crisis or whatever challenges we're kind of working through.
So I would love to know your opinion, being an expert in this. Are all crises, whether it's personally, professionally, globally, able to be recoverable, in your opinion?
Well, I don't know that they're all recoverable on all levels, but there's certainly recovery at some level. There are two great lies out there in life and in business. And the first one is that it can't happen to me. I've seen that great lie played out many times where the scientists at Chernobyl think, you know, there can never be a meltdown if we, you know, break some protocols. Hurricane Katrina, everybody thought the levee system could never break. It can happen to us. And we need to be very sober about that. The second great lie is that there's no hope. There's always hope. I mean, even in these very horrible cases where people have lost their lives and property's been destroyed, there is hope in terms of going forward. Maybe it's just to learn the lessons of the past and not repeat them, but there's always hope in any situation.
So let's talk about that for a minute. So what is the differentiating factor? You have two people who might be in similar or dissimilar situations where they might have some sort of atrocity happen. They lose a loved one, lose a job, lose some home, all these different horrible things like we just saw in California this last year with all the loved ones who lost homes in the fires. What's the difference that has one person go out there, recover, get back on their feet within a short amount of time versus other people who it might be incapacitating for them and they're unable to move forward or move through it? What would you say are the distinguishing features of those two types of people?
Well, what I've noticed over and over again is the people that navigate successfully through a crisis, you know, including these big ones where they've lost their homes to a landslide or a fire. And I've literally met hundreds of these people in the course of my career. And in fact, I'm working on the fires and the landslide right now. I just got retained as an economist to study them. But more importantly, to your question, it breaks down into some simple steps. And what creates, you know, failure on top of failure is to think that you're going to come out of that overnight. It's a sensible paced day-to-day effort where people break things apart into simple components, and they have just kind of a slow but steady progress mindset. And me, you know, that's where I got the title of the book, Me, We, Do, Be. Me is our mindset. It's being reflective. It's gathering information. It's really having our head clear and focused. We is our connection, disengaging with toxic people and engaging with healthy people and being a valuable member of that team and a team effort. Do is kind of the get or done kind of attitude you know, let's roll our sleeves up and get the work done. And B is the cornerstone with progress. That's where you set manageable, sensible goals, and you achieve a little more week in, week out, year in, year out, where you're just continuously progressing. So it's really those me, we, do, be components that are at the essence of real thriving.
So we're looking right now at, in the example we just gave, a macro example. Say somebody in a macro disaster, such as a fire or landslide or something terrible of that magnitude happening. Let's say that we have somebody in, and there are multiple mini disasters that always happen in our life, from, God forbid, something happening to somebody's children or at the workplace. Let's say that you have somebody who has been the breadwinner in his or her family for 10 years, and then that breadwinner is the sole person, the sole provider for that family, and he or she gets laid off. For that person in that moment, they've literally just gone into survival mode of, oh my God, every week that I'm not getting a paycheck or I'm not getting severance, I'm going deeper into debt or not going to be able to put food on the table. Can you still apply those same principles to somebody dealing with a disaster at the level of family or job, and how would you do that?
Well, I'm glad you asked that question, Jennifer, because for years I volunteered at a homeless shelter where I literally worked every week with people that had not only lost their job, they had lost their home, they lost their families, sometimes through some very, very bad choice, poor choices. But the thing that they had in common, at least in the group that I worked with, where they were motivated, they wanted to get back on their feet. And so a lot of times I would explain all these principles, you know, and we can go into the detail to the extent that you want, you know, what me habits look like and we and do be habits all look like. And they would say, well, that's all great, but I'm going to put that on the shelf. What I need first is a job, and then I'll worry about me habits like reading or meditation, prayer, nature walks. Those are the me habits. And with we, I'll worry more about, you know, being friendlier to people and connecting and conflict resolution, which is a skill set of the me cornerstone. And I said, no. You know, if you address all these issues, your chances of getting a job are enormously enhanced. And I saw it over and over again where people, even in these very dire straits, if they would implement these little habits in their lives and cut out the arrogance saying it doesn't apply to me, because it does apply to me. It applies to you. It applies to everyone, including people in these tough situations. They inevitably get back on their feet. I saw it over and over again. But the people that are arrogant that say, oh, that's too simple, that doesn't apply to me, you know, frankly, they wallow in their misery for a very long time until they basically say, you know what, those fundamental rules do apply to me.
I love what you're saying. And in my line of work, I love the psychology and what motivates human beings. And so knowing that there are so many different types, shapes, colors of what it looks like to be a human being, and traveling around the world, as you've seen, so many different cultural experiences of what it looks like to be a human being, would you say that it's possible that every human being, no matter what their circumstances, their personality, you know, you have these whole Myers-Briggs things, does everybody still have that capacity to enter into the me, we, do, be, even if their personality isn't in line with it? Like for myself, for example, I'm somebody who's very into meditation and spiritual work, and it's just part of the groundwork and foundation of who I am as a human being. And then you take somebody else, like a friend of mine, for example, who was recently laid off. And in his situation, he's very analytical, needs the facts, wants the facts, not as interested in the esoteric or, you know, meditation or those sorts of things. And he and I were having a conversation about this just last week about how frustrated he was and how is he going to find a job when he is the main provider in the family. And like you said, he was resistant to all of those things. Is it a personality thing, or do you think everybody has the capacity to embrace these characteristics and ideas?
I think everyone has a capacity. In fact, I'm certain of it. I mean, we all have different styles. And in the book, even though the subtitle is The Four Cornerstones of Success, right up front, I define that success looks like different things to different people. For some people, the idea of success is getting a job. For some people, it's to, you know, beat cancer. For some people, it's to connect with the divine. For some people, it's to, you know, for some students, it's to get an A on the test. Everyone has a different measure of success. For some people, it's, you know, mastering a musical instrument. So I let the reader define what success looks like, but In doing that, I get at the essence of these four cornerstones that apply to all of us. These are fundamental principles that are just oftentimes neglected and lead to disaster. And in order to create success, we need to get back to the basics. You know, in other words, a lot of times you hear people say, you know, I've interviewed 487, you know, millionaires around the world, and I've found out all their daily habits, and this is exactly what we've got to do to be a millionaire. Well, a lot of times those are kind of contradictory, and it's all over the place. Frankly, they're like chasing rabbits around the room trying to, you know, figure all that out. What my approach has been very simple, very pragmatic, and very foundational. And then from there, you define success that looks like to you, but in the process, you've laid a great foundation that whatever you want to do, you enjoy, you know, a success at that because you have a solid foundation.
I appreciate where you're coming from on that. And I know one thing you and I talked about offline before we went on air is about generating authentic success. I know you said you leave it open in the book about what is success. How would you define authentic success? What does that mean to you?
I think authentic success means that it's success, you know, for you. I mean, I would never come out and say, you know, success has nothing to do with money, because, you know, saying that is silly, because whoever says that's never slept under a bridge. I never have either, but I've met people that have, and their idea of success is very different than others. So it really comes down to the me cornerstone, taking that quiet, reflective time to really say, what is really important to me? Now, some people, and there was actually a phase in my life where it was very important to make a lot of money. And I hope people that have that goal get it out of their system quickly, because it's really not that satisfying. And I say that from someone who's kind of conquered that realm. There's many other types of success. And my idea of success today is very different. My idea of success is meeting, you know, going and speaking to women that are in homeless shelters, or going through drug recovery, or homeless people, or at-risk teenagers. And then also I speak to executives. I just spoke at a large crowd of, top executives. But I'm talking to all these groups about these fundamental things that get forgotten in a world where there's so much technology. We're bombarded with advertisements, you know, hundreds of times a day. And there's all this competition for our attention. And that, frankly, there's just so much distraction that my message is really that's all fine. I'm all for technology. I'm not putting it down. But we also need to look at our foundational elements and make sure they're solidly in place. That really is my message with Me, We, Do, Be. And it really works.
And so what your advice would be as kind of a starting point to anybody out there who's facing any type of disaster or adversity is, step number one, it sounds like, just take that time out to maybe meditate and reflect and understand what your needs are, kind of like that thing on the airplane before you put your child or anybody else's airplane mask on or oxygen mask on, put your own one on first, otherwise you won't be any good to anybody else, right?
Yeah, very well said, Jennifer. Exactly. Before you can connect with people, I mean, remember, there's over 7 billion people on the planet, so you first have to kind of decide, and you can't connect with all of them. So you want to first decide, you know, who am I? What makes me comfortable? Am I introverted? Am I extroverted? You know, what is my style? Who am I? What am I all about? Kind of Socrates, know yourself kind of, you know, kind of essence. And then from there, then you have kind of a vibe, and when you have and everyone has a vibe, and you tend to collect people in your life that have a similar on a similar wavelength as yourself. I'm sure you know a lot of people have noticed that. I'm sure you have too. But it does start with that kind of quiet, reflective time up front, and then you go to the weak cornerstone and connect with not just people, you connect with the right people.
Yeah, I was just speaking with somebody in my office about that lately. It's all about this. Going back to your vibration example, is if I'm out there and perhaps I'm somebody who's a user, abuser of people, drugs, addicted to different things, whatever it may be, technology, shopping, substances, I'm naturally going to find people who support those habits and who are going to reinforce my worldview. And I find many of us as human beings, if we're confronted with somebody who disagrees with a behavior pattern that might not be in our highest and best good, for some people, they might even get rid of that person as a friend because they're so confronted by that resistance that they experience, even if it might be in their highest and best good, to consider, oh, there's a different way of doing things. Does that make sense?
It makes complete sense. In fact, in the book, the book is not all rah, 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 you know, positive thinking. In fact, there's a whole section about toxic people, the narcissists, the borderline personality disorders, and the sociopaths are the big three personality disorders. There's actually a lot more than that, but those are the big three. And it's really not so important as to make a diagnostic, you know, effort with these people, but it's what is important to just recognize that they're toxic and just get away. And everyone inevitably will come across these people through the course of business and life, and healthy people identify it and they make a conscientious effort to just get away from that kind of nonsense, because it will pull you down.
So let's say hypothetically, I completely agree. And being a human being, we have compassion and we have empathy. So let's say you have a colleague, somebody who maybe you were friends with, and then they made poor life choices. Or you have somebody that is a friend, and that friend has made bad choice after bad choice. And over time, maybe they didn't start off toxic, but they became toxic. At what point do you cut people off? And do you have to factor in the compassion and the empathy? Because on the one hand, and you know this because I know you volunteer and help the homeless, and you're very philanthropic in that way, as I am myself, you want to give, you want to help people, and God forbid you see any human being in pain, even if God forbid they are suffering from, you know, some sort of narcissism or something else, you still don't want to see another human being suffer. So at what point does it no longer become your responsibility, if that person is in your purview, either professionally or personally, to make a concerted effort to help them get their life to be in a better place?
Well, that's a great question. It's a matter of balance, because there's some people that are, you know, try and help everyone that they come across. And really, you know, the reality is some people won't accept the helps, or frankly will be taken advantage by their efforts to help. In other words, the enablers. That's a really bad place to be. And then you swing the pendulum the other way, and you have people that just don't care about anybody but themselves. There's a balance in the middle where you say, you know, do I have the capacity to help this person? Because while we may want to, we may not really have the ability. I mean, we just can't, you know, sprinkle sunshine and dollar bills everywhere
yes,
we go.
Yes, we can, Dr. Bell. Yes, we can.
well, we can certainly sprinkle the sunshine, but, you know, at some time we're going to run out. And we got to take care of ourselves. So MeWe DoBe is all about balance. They're four legs of a table, and to have a solid table, you need all four legs, and they need to be, you know, in roughly equal proportions. So I think what we got to do is say, am I really enabling this bad behavior? Because if you are, you just have to stop. I mean, I'm not gossiping because he's very open about it, but my own brother got into drug addiction and alcohol. He's an alcoholic. He's been recovered for over a decade now. Today, he has a very successful life. But there was a period of time where the family was enabling this very bad behavior. And he didn't actually turn the corner until everybody said, you know, enough, no more help. Go live under a bridge, whatever it takes. But you've exhausted us. And then he hit rock bottom, and then he turned his life around. And today, he's very successful. But on the other hand, we don't want to be, selfish and not help other people. Of course, we want to be empathetic, and of course, we want to look for opportunities to be of service. So there is a balance, but I think it really takes part of that me cornerstone to be reflective and say, am I really helping the situation by reaching out to this person? Do I really have the capacity to reach out to these people, or am I just enabling bad behavior and make all those intelligent decisions?
And so what would you recommend doing? It's one thing if it's, say, your brother, for example, or it's somebody who was a friend who's no longer a friend. How do you handle it if that person who's toxic is in your direct workspace, either as a colleague, a peer, a manager, or somebody who you're managing? What would be a recommendation in those situations to handle it?
Well, you know, in the book, there's a whole section about conflict resolution and the elements of conflict resolution. I mean, you first try, of course, to listen rather than in a conflict. The knee jerk reaction is to just, you know, give a lecture, or go through a diatribe, or you know, stomp your feet. The better reaction is just listen quietly and really try and understand the other person's point of view, even though you may disagree with it. Just to try and understand where they're coming from, and then kind of think that over reflectively, and then perhaps brainstorm on some solutions. Now, some people aren't willing to go through that process. Healthy people are, but your question is about someone who's unhealthy, and then you got to make decisions whether this is really tolerable in the long run, or if I've really got to transfer to a new department or quit jobs altogether, or whatever, and essentially be kind to yourself, because some people may not have the same mindset of trying to resolving things. But there's a whole bunch of mitigation strategies in the book in terms of how to deal with it, but that's the essence of it.
Awesome. Those are great pieces of advice. So we've been focusing a lot on people perhaps who have toxic personality traits, or if you're encountering those people, what are some of the attributes or characteristics of the people who you see that thrive despite adversity? Are there commonalities that you've seen?
Yeah, the people that really thrive are those who have realistic expectations. The approach I took in the homeless shelter, which I think will really kind of answer that question, is I would talk about daily habits of exercise and eating right and being friendly to people and going to the library, reading books, and on and on, writing down our goals, getting up early. We talked about a lot of these very practical daily habits that were, some were me or we or do or be habits. And one guy named Danny, he got all excited, and I went in there one day, and he says, Dr. Bell, and he had literally written down 20 or 30 new habits, and they were all very aggressive. Read one book a week, go to the beach and meditate for 30 minutes a day, exercise for an hour and a half, and I just got exhausted as he went down this list. And I said, Danny, I'm really proud of you for getting the point of our daily habits and taking control of our lives rather than letting life just happen to us. And I said, but you know, I want you to knock it out of the park. And frankly, I don't know if anybody could just turn the flip the switch on all of these 20 or 30 habits. Just pick one. And so he says, okay. Well, he seemed a little disappointed, but he did. He says, well, I'm going to do 50 push-ups a day. And I said, that's great, Danny, but your commitment to me and to the class and to yourself is do one push-up a day. And then if you want to do 49 more or 149 more, you can do them. But make a commitment to do one push-up a day, and let's check on that next week. And so I went back to the class the following week, and Danny says, you know, I only did 6 push-ups a day on average. I said, Danny, that's awesome. You did 600% more than you've ever done, 600% more than your goal. I said, you're on fire. That's awesome. And this is a guy who had, a lot of homeless people and a lot of people have self-esteem problems. And he hadn't had anybody tell him, look, I'm really proud of you. He hadn't heard that in a very long time. And so the next week I went back and he was doing 20 push-ups a day. And then the next week, you get the point, he kept going up and up. And the next week he was going out and to the beach and meditating. And the next week he was doing the push-ups and he was going to the library and reading. And about 3 or 4 months later, he actually was doing everything on his list. But wow. He did it gradually, and there was kind of a ripple effect with just simply doing one push-up a day. That's what really works with Thrivers, is to do it in a sensible, paced, day-to-day effort. Just pick one easy habit, knock it out of the park, that builds self-esteem, and it just ripples out and ripples out and ripples out. I've seen that process over and over and over again. We don't talk about it. We don't talk enough about it, but that really is the formula of success. It's not walking over hot coals or going to some, seminar where we chant how great we are. That's what I'm delivering is the real way to do it.
Yeah, and I think it's very applicable to anybody out there if they're feeling kind of down in the dumps or perhaps they were laid off or fired. And I see it has such a strong negative impact, and people make it mean something about themselves. Like perhaps the company is going through an acquisition or a major restructuring, and God forbid somebody loses his or her job, people can internalize it and make it seem like I'm a bad person, I didn't do enough, or I didn't get in with the right people. And then there's this overwhelming sense of guilt, where I would agree with what you say is when people are out there job hunting and say you're not working, it's all about having these incremental tasks that you can do every day. Okay, apply to one job a day. Maybe that's a good starting place. And by 2 weeks in, you'll be applying to 2 jobs a day. And, connect to one new person every single day and maybe go to one networking event a week. I remember when I told people that they were job hunting to spend 30% of their time applying to jobs online, 30% of their time leveraging their social network, and 30% of their time just getting out there networking. And if done well, then the last 10% of your time will be spent interviewing. And I think that when you put these measurable results that you can track, then you can reward yourself. And instead of going, oh, I'm such a moron, or I'm so dumb, I didn't do enough, you can at least say, oh gosh, I took that one step. Like in the case that you gave of what's his name, Danny, it's like it all started with one push-up. And then next thing you know, here he was checking off every item on his goal list.
That's very beautifully said, Jennifer. I think you're giving out some very good advice. Let me just add one more thought to that. And that is, and I think you alluded to this, We do things better when we measure what we're doing. In other words, if we are wanting to lose weight and we write down everything we eat throughout the day, in writing it down, we're going to perform better than if we just try and keep track in our head. And so in those that kind of 30%, 30%, 30%, and then 10% model that you have, if you actually write that down and keep track of that, you've got a perfect framework for successfully getting a job. Because if you do all that, what else can you do? And you will ultimately be successful. There's just no question about it.
Yeah. And one more thing I would piggyback on what you just said as well, which made me think of it with your example with, I believe it was Danny, is having a buddy system, having an accountability partner, because it's one thing to hold yourself accountable, which is a huge deal in and of itself from a self-esteem and self-confidence place, is to go, okay, I have this Excel spreadsheet or a piece of paper on my iPhone, and I made a little check mark every time I did it. And then if you really want to take it the next step, it's have an accountability buddy who holds you accountable for what you say you're up to. And then it makes the successes, just like when Danny shared with you, it's just like it made it so much more sweet, because then you get to share it with somebody. Or if you're having a tough week and you go, gosh, Doc, I only did that one push-up. And then, you know, you get to be the cheerleader and be like, but hey, you did the one push-up. And maybe by next week, you'll be doing 6 or 7 or 8. And having that buddy system for accountability is an amazing technique that I personally employ. I have a buddy I do a call with every Thursday, aside from my normal business coach and all my other coaches in my life. This buddy and I met in a class, and she and I hold each other accountable and help clear the air for anything we didn't keep our word to or stay committed to. And it creates this foundation for long-term success.
I love it. Yeah, and I forget which chapter it is in my book, but we were talking about goals towards the end, the B cornerstone. I say that write your goals down, put them in writing, don't just have them in your head, and then also share them with someone. And I think you've also alluded to this point, share them with someone, but the right person.
Yes.
You know, not just anybody, but get that right person to share it with. That makes it a very tangible commitment rather than just kind of daydreaming and wishing. I think great points you've made.
Yeah, and you as well. And I agree. And to take it back to the very first point that we touched on about toxic people, be careful who's listening that you speak into, because if you have the listening of people who are looking for you to fail, or even unfortunately, sometimes certain people's family members, you know, I remember when I opened my own company and left my 6-figure-a-year job and my parents were beside themselves that I would ever do something so silly and stupid. But then I had to find new people to listen to me who were entrepreneurs and business people who were willing to listen for my greatness in that area rather than Jen Hill, the employee. And so it ties back in to make sure that whoever you surround yourself with, the listening that you have is integral and going to hold you up to the standard of what you want to be accountable for.
Yeah, again, very well said. I mean, what you said kind of reminds me when I'm talking to at-risk teenagers, because believe it or not, I mean, my parents were always supportive and they didn't really push me one way or another, but if I wanted to do something, they were always supportive about it. But not everybody enjoys parents like that, and it would surprise me. Some of these kids that were in are kind of at risk, you know, teenagers is kind of the label they've gotten. They didn't want to share with their family that, hey, I want to go to community college and get a 2-year degree, because that, you know, my parents would have said, sure, of course. But some families would say, oh, well, you know, you think you're showing off, or, you know, whatever. So you got to find that right person that will listen to what you're saying and be enthusiastic, you know, about the situation rather than, you know, jealous or guarded or putting down or negative in some way. We got to find those right buddies, as you put it.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say at-risk teenagers, because it's so sad that here we are, two adults having a conversation with many other adults, and who knows, maybe some teenagers or other people tuning in, but it's a perpetual thing that continues on long into adulthood of the cattiness that sometimes goes on. And I'm committed that one day you and I will have this chat 20 years from now, and that we'll say, wow, remember Dr. Bell when we had that talk on February 5th, and look how far we've come as human beings, and we're no longer catty or jealous or putting one another down, but human beings in the state of the world that we are in, there are going to be people out there who will want to see you fail. And I think it's up to you to choose whether or not you allow those people in your circle.
Yeah, you got to be very careful. I think you're right. I think I'm a little more I'm pretty optimistic. I think you are too. I mean, I think things are getting progressively better. And I think that people are getting better educated and more in touch with these things. At least in a lot of regards, things are getting better. And I think you're right. I look forward to a day where there's world peace and I can retire. There's no more disasters. But
no more conflict resolution.
I'll just keep going.
I know. When there's 0% unemployment and no conflict resolution is necessary and it's just rainbows and fairy dust all over. But until then, I think you and I are both gainfully employed, unfortunately, or it's zero or however you want to look at it. So, well, Dr. Bell, you've given us so many things. I want to make sure to recap any salient points that we may not have highlighted. What are 2 to 3 points that you would love the listeners to walk away with today?
Well, a lot of effort. 25 years came into developing these 4 little words, me, we, do, be. You know, me is our mindset. It's taking time to read, meditate, pray, nature walks, just, you know, spending some time in your own head that is quality time. We is smiling more, waving at neighbors, being friendly, listening, all those kinds of skills of connecting with people better. Do is get her done, taking care of our money, taking care of our health, taking care of our keeping our environment clutter-free. And B is all about writing down our goals, sensible goals, a paced, sensible day-to-day effort. And then once you've reached a goal, you know, have a little celebration of some kind. You know, that's your legacy and be proud of that. That's the essence of MeWeDoBe, and that's really my message to people is keep it simple and do those four things and then build the success however you want to define it.
Great advice, Dr. Bell. So speaking of which, where would you like our listeners to go if perhaps there are corporations out there tuning in who may want to hire you as a speaker or people out there who think, gosh, that book sounds perfect. I would love to go pick it up. Where would you recommend that people find more information about you?
Well, the book is at Amazon. MeWeDoBe, just go to Amazon. It's there. I have a website, drbell.com, which people can go to, and we've got some of the stuff. And actually, sitting with me is Sierra Ashdown, my in-house publicist, and we're adding a bunch of videos that are kind of going to be fun and training videos in these various skills we're going to be doing in the next couple months. So I'm easy to get a hold of, and you know, but get the book at Amazon, and it's gotten great reviews so far, so people seem to be loving it.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you again for joining us today, Dr. Bell. And if you missed any portion of the show, you can always go to the LA Talk Radio website immediately following the show under the Get Yourself the Job page and find the show available for download under the archives. Additionally, at the end of every week following the show, you can find the show available on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes and download and subscribe and listen at your leisure for free. Tune in next week. We have joining us Gabrielle Venna. She is a life coach and business mentor and will be talking to us about what to do. What are the six signs that your career is making you bored and when and why is it time to make a change? So tune in next week, Monday at 4, and thank you again for joining us today, Dr. Bell.
Thank you, Jennifer. Really enjoyed it.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.